So over the last 2 days, we tried to summarize some of the themes that have emerged from this meeting. And the main themes that have come out of all of the talks are indicated by these boxes. And what they show us is just the incredible, first of all, multidisciplinarity, the vast range of fields. It's really intimidating when you think about it, that we need to try to bring together to come up with a hopefully a coherent understanding of the functioning of our planet from the inner core, as we've seen today, this afternoon, to the very surface. And so the talks have basically focused on multiple issues. Mineral physics, very important, of course. And the two issues that are most prominent are our understanding of the rheology of the mantle, which was the prominent issue, but now, as we've seen, also the core itself, the rheology, understanding it is extremely important, and of course, the equation of state. Of course, we have surface constraints that come from geology and geochemistry, and obviously one of the talks by Dominique Weiss pointed out the importance of explaining isotopic anomalies in terms of movements or mixing in the Earth's interior. But we also heard references to plate reconstructions, which come from geologic data, and these help us understand how tectonic plates have evolved, as well as vertical movements, or what the geologists call epi-erogeny for vertical movements of continents. In seismology, of course, there are two approaches or perspectives that were advocated in this meeting. First of all, an inverse approach, which involves looking at three-dimensional isotropic and anisotropic structure from global tomographic studies, and of course the importance of waveform studies in terms of testing this. And finally, fluid dynamics, which is an application of classical theories, relatively classical theories, to understanding the movements of material both in the inner core and the mantle. And the ultimate goal, I guess in some sense it was implicit in all of this meeting, was we would like to bring all of these things together to finally, perhaps in a human lifetime, maybe before some of us retire in this room, hopefully achieve a geodynamic reconstruction of the Earth's three-dimensional thermodynamic evolution since probably at least the Eoarchean, I would say, about 4 billion years ago. And as we've seen, this involves now understanding how the core evolves over the same time period and how it's coupled to the mantle. In some sense, to repeat a mantra that David Stevenson said a long time ago, the mantle is the master and the core is the slave. And I think that still remains the case. So understanding the master and then how the core, the servant, responds is going to be obviously understanding, an important part of the understanding. And therefore, this goal raises a number of issues and questions which are going to be, which were discussed in many of the talks. If we don't understand the rheology, if we don't understand the density anomalies, or indeed even how to apply the boundary conditions in these dynamic models, we simply will never properly understand how mantle convection works. And so in understanding the rheology, it's now actually becoming rather promising and at the same time very intimidating, because a lot of the cherished mechanisms for mantle deformation that many of us have grown up with and learned are now being put into question by the new results that have come out of Patrick Cordier's laboratory and others, which make us question, for example, the issues of whether diffusion creep is dominant. It was long said that if there's no anisotropy in most of the mantle, that means diffusion creep is the dominant creep mechanism, grain size sensitive creep. Well, apparently that obviously is no longer true anymore. It doesn't have to be the case. So that's something we need to consider. And for the equation of state, we still are struggling to understand chemical versus thermal components in understanding the density structure. If we don't have the density anomalies, we don't have the buoyancy forces that drive the flow, and therefore, I would say the prominent and most important part of this whole story is sitting in that middle box. And finally, the boundary conditions themselves are very complex. If we want to achieve self-consistent plate tectonics, we still have to come back to the first box, which is understanding the rheology correctly. And there's one thing that was almost swept under the rug in this meeting, and that's really understanding the conditions in the core, the thermal conditions, because they apply the lower boundary on the mantle, what is the core mantle boundary temperature? How has it evolved over time? And how much heat is the mantle pulling out of the core? If we don't understand that, we won't understand plume dynamics. And we won't understand, therefore, the relevant importance of plumes relative to slabs. And that's something that came up in this meeting. The dominant paradigm today is that slabs alone do most of the work in the mantle. But that's only true if the core provides little heat to the mantle. If the core is providing a lot of heat into the mantle, that paradigm needs to be re-examined. So hopefully we can talk about that as well. And other questions that... Yes, yeah. I'll let Christine take over.
Yeah, one thing that I think we have to remember is that we have the Earth's dynamics and we have the Earth's mineralogy. And I like to point this out usually when I start my talks. So those together, the dynamics and the mineralogy, they form structures. And seismologists, and I'm now talking from the point of view of a seismologist, we're looking at these seismic structures by using seismic waves. And as a body wave seismologist, I would look at travel times, amplitudes, polarities, waveforms, frequency contents. And then usually we go back and we constrain the physical parameters of the structures that we can see and we can detect. And then we go and interpret those observations that we have, or those physical parameters, in terms of dynamics and mineralogy. And that's an interpretation. I think this is really important to remember this, that we interpret dynamics, but it may or may not be the real dynamics that we're seeing. And the same with the mineralogy. We interpret mineralogy based on the seismic observations that we have, and it may or may not be the Earth's mineralogy. So this is just something from the point of view of a seismologist to think about. And just to lead into the discussion now, I think we have been discussing a little bit between ourselves, and it actually was quite a lively discussion. And there are a few points that we thought we might want to talk about now in the next hour or so. Starting with mineral physics, some things that were discussed before is what is the grain size inside the Earth? What about attenuation? We haven't really talked much about attenuation. We also haven't really talked about transient rheology or partial melting here, but I think it's still important to maybe discuss this, and maybe we can include this in the discussion that comes up later. Also, the scaling, spatial and temporal scaling. I think that's something really important for the future, definitely, to understand the Earth. So, for example, fine scale versus large scale structure, seismic structure or whatever structure, scaling of strain rates. We had this discussion earlier. We stopped it because it might be interesting to discuss again now with everything we know. And also, the fine scale versus large scale of physics, the complexity we're seeing, and I think Alex had a bit more to say about that later. But then also geodynamics, CMB heat flux, because that's important for slabs and plumes, as Alex just said. But also one question is, how well do all these dynamic models that we've seen in the beginning, and the first morning I thought was really interesting for the different dynamic models, how well do they actually satisfy the observables that we have at the Earth, including heat flow topography, but also CMB topography, plate motions, and the geoid, for example. And then, of course, the time evolution and the geochemical signals. Can we actually say something about that? And then, of course, we go back to seismology. What can we do with seismology to get better pictures? And so one thing that we discussed was different methods to probe the same structure, and we've seen a little bit about this already during this meeting. So we can use splitting and reflections. We can also use tomography, multipathing, as Sanne has shown earlier, and maybe combine this even with reflections. But we should definitely think about attenuation. And one thing that we thought was quite important is benchmarks. Look at the same structure with different methods and see how different the results are that come out. So is some of the complexity due to the different methods that we're applying? And also, Jeannot wanted to have this in there, can full waveform modeling actually help to constrain some of the structures better? So I think maybe we should start discussing these things. So does anyone want to say anything about any of those points?